from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, text, Chapter 6, Text 30. Title heading is Creation of the Universal Form. Mukhato vartata Brahma.
Mukhato vartata Brahma.
Pushash kurut purush purushasya kurut vaha.
Purushasya
Yastun mukhatva varanam.
Yastun mukhatva varanam.
Mukhabhut brahmano guru.
Mukhabhut brahmano guru.
Mukhata.
Mukhata.
From the mouth.
From the mouth.
Avartata.
Avartata.
Generated.
Generated.
Brahma.
Brahma.
The Vedic wisdom.
The Vedic wisdom.
Purushasya.
Purushasya.
Of the.
Of the Virat.
Virat Purushaha.
Virat Purushaha.
The gigantic form.
Gigantic form.
Guru Udvaha.
Guru Udvaha.
O chief of the Guru dynasty.
O chief of the Guru dynasty.
Ya.
Ya.
Who are.
Who are.
To.
To.
Due.
Due to.
Due to. Anmukhatvata.
Anmukhatvata.
Inclined to.
Varnam,
of the orders of society.
Of the orders of society.
Mukhya,
Mukhya,
the chief.
The chief.
Abhut,
Abhut,
so became.
So became.
Brahmanaha,
Brahmanaha,
called the Brahmanas.
Called the Brahmanas.
Guru,
Guru,
the recognized teacher or spiritual master.
The recognized teacher or spiritual master.
Translation. O chief of the Guru dynasty, the Vedic wisdom became manifest from the mouth of the Virat, the giant form. Those who are inclined to this Vedic knowledge are called Brahmanas, and they are the natural teachers and spiritual masters of the order of society. Translation responsively. O chief of the Guru dynasty, the Vedic wisdom became manifest.
The Vedic wisdom became manifest.
From the mouth of the Virat.
From the mouth of the Virat.
The gigantic form.
The gigantic form.
Those who are inclined to this Vedic knowledge.
Those who are inclined to this Vedic knowledge.
Are called Brahmanas.
Are called Brahmanas.
And they are the natural teachers.
And they are the natural teachers.
And spiritual masters.
And spiritual masters.
Of all the orders of society.
Of all the orders of society.
Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 4.13, the four orders of human society developed with the order of the body of the gigantic form. The bodily divisions are the mouth, arms, waist and legs. Those who are situated on the mouth are called the Brahmanas. Those who are situated on the arms are called the Kshatriyas. And those who are situated on the waist are called the Vaishyas. And those who are situated on the legs are called the Sudras. Everyone is situated in the body of the Supreme in his gigantic Vishwarupa form. In terms of the four orders, therefore, no caste is to be considered degraded because of being situated on a particular part of the body. In our own bodies, we do not show any actual difference in our treatment towards the hands or the legs. Each and every part of the body is important, although the mouth is the most important of the bodily parts. If other parts are cut off from the body, a man can continue his life. But if the mouth is cut off, one cannot live. Therefore, this most important part of the body of the Lord is called the sitting place of the Brahmanas, who are inclined to Vedic wisdom. One who is not inclined to the Vedic wisdom, but to mundane affairs, cannot be called a Brahmana, even if he is born of a Brahmana family or a father. To have a Brahmana father does not qualify one as a Brahmana. The main qualification of a Brahmana is to be inclined to the Vedic wisdom. The Vedas are situated on the mouth of the Lord, and therefore anyone who is inclined to the Vedic wisdom is certainly situated on the mouth of the Lord, and he is a Brahmana. This inclination towards Vedic wisdom is also not restricted to any particular caste or community. Anyone from any family, from any part of the world, may become inclined to the Vedic wisdom, and that will qualify him as a real Brahmana. A real Brahmana is the natural teacher or spiritual master. Unless one has Vedic knowledge, one cannot become a spiritual master. The perfect knowledge of the Vedas is to know the Lord, the personality of Godhead. And that is the end of Vedic knowledge, or the Vedanta. One who is situated in the impersonal Brahman and has no information of the Supreme Personality of Godhead may become a Brahmana, but he cannot become a spiritual master. It is said in the Padma Purana, Satkarma Nipuno Vipro, Mantra Tantra Saradaha, Avano Guru Nasyad, Vaishnava Sva Pacho Guru. An impersonalist can become a qualified Brahmana, but he cannot become a spiritual master unless and until he is promoted to the stage of a Vaishnava, or a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Chaitanya, the great authority of Vedic wisdom in the modern age, stated, Kiba vipra gibanyasi sudakini nai, ye Krishna tattva veta se guru hai. A person can be a Brahmana or a Sudra or a Sannyasi, but if he happens to be well versed in the science of Krishna, then he is fit to become a spiritual master. That's the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjhalila 8.128. The qualification then of a spiritual master is not to be a qualified Brahmana, but to be well versed in the science of Krishna. One who is conversant with the Vedic wisdom is a Brahmana, and only a Brahmana who is a pure Vaishnava and knows all the intricacies of the science of Krishna can become a spiritual master. Om Agyana Timiranda Shyaganjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Sarasvati Devam Gaudavani Pacharini Nevisesha Shunyavadi Bhasha Chadesha Tarini. Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyas Chakripa Sindha Vayeva Chapatitanam Pavanevya Vaishnavevya Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sthaya Tulesha Madhya Vridayananda Goswami Niti Namane. It's amazing how Krishna works sometimes. You know, you have a particular topic that you want to talk about, and then Krishna presents this amazing purport here, which is so relevant to the topic that you wanted to speak about. I've got quite a few notes because there's quite a bit of stuff that I want to go through in this class today. So the topic of it is the Brahmana only speaks Vedic wisdom. That's basically the synopsis of what Prabhupada is saying here. So in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam between Vidura and Maitreya, the universal force of the Lord is mentioned here and is described. And from my dealings with various faith traditions, the subject of the universal form of the Lord has no comparable equivalent in any other theologies, any other religions. In fact, this knowledge of Vridat Rupa, the gigantic form of the Lord, is actually unique to Vedic culture. No one else has this understanding. And it's placed so much prominence within our scriptures, you know, in that it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, it's mentioned in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and now here again in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, again this is mentioned, the Virat Rupa form of the Lord. And in that, Vidura is asking Maitreya the activities of the Lord, the process of creation and so on and so forth. The highlight of this whole section is, it shows the compassion of the Supreme Lord. That the Lord, he created this material creation for those rebellious entities, us, so that due to our enviousness, we're living in this material world and we're unhappy, and the Lord wants to do something about that and relieve that unhappiness. Through compassion, he provides the information to free one from this material world and the clutches of material entanglement through Vedic knowledge. Through this Vedic knowledge, it actually has the potential to liberate a person. So let's talk about this Vedic knowledge and who delivers that knowledge. The Brahmanas, as is pointed out here, who is a Brahmana? And how does a Brahmana present this knowledge? Through compassion. Prabhupada has mentioned that actually the Brahmanas are the mouthpiece of Krishna. They're the mouth of the Virat Rupa. They're the spokespersons for Krishna. And you can be, any walk of life can be a Brahmana. This is sometimes misconstrued and also misunderstood with our Hindu friends. I had an incident recently which was quite interesting. and an eye-opening in that there was yet another scandal in the yoga community. And I want to inform the devotees so they'll know how to deal with this situation, because it's dealing with friends of ours, because it's something to do with the Shiva ashram, and the ashramites who have been affected by this may come to our temple because they're our friends. And I want to be able to make sure that everybody comforts them in a true brahminical sense and offers them spiritual solace in this time of difficulty, because they're our friends. I don't want people to be too fanatical, saying, you know, gee, see, this and this has happened, but I'll explain that. I just want them to be compassionate. Anyway, aside from that, there was an incident that I mentioned, is that because of the scandal, one of my Hindu colleagues in the Hindu Community Council said that, he posted an email, another Westerner who's not really a Hindu, not born in pure lineage, and not really a Brahmana, you know, because there was this deal about something, about fall down. And I just say, this is the mentality of a lot of people in the Hindu community. If you're not born in the Brahmana family, you're really never going to be a Brahmana. And in particular, they pick on the Westerners. A Westerner can never really be a presenter of Vedic knowledge. So it's quite interesting. But Srila Prabhupada points out in this purport quite clearly that the main qualification is that one has to know Vedic wisdom, one has to know about Krishna. And if one is purely in knowledge of Krishna, then he is qualified to be a Brahmana. And beyond being even a Brahmana, he is qualified to be a spiritual master. So a real Brahmana is a natural teacher and spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada points that out in his purport. And one becomes fit to be a Brahmana or a spiritual mentor or a guide who's conversant with this Vedic wisdom, the science of Krishna. Now, I just wanted to mention, it's not really something that would usually be described in a Bhagavatam class, but I just wanted to present it to you so everybody is aware of it. You'll hear different rumors and so on and so forth. The person about whom the scandal is revolving is, big news articles in the paper and all that kind of stuff, is none other than our friend, who I've mentioned several times in my lectures and who has been invited to the temple, who comes to Rath Yatra and so on and so forth, is Swami Shankarananda. Everybody is aware of the Shiva ashram. Some of you may have even gone to the ashram when Indradumna Maharaj or Kadambakanana Maharaj was here, or Jayadev. We used to go down there and chant. And it's been revealed that he has had sexual relationships with a number of students in secret. Anybody heard about that? Has everybody been aware of it? No one's heard about that? Yeah? You've heard about it? Okay. So it's... I'm only mentioning this so that you are aware and ready to constructively help those that come to us for support and help at this time, which they will. Already, Nanda Mandir Prabhu was telling me that some have come to Urban Yoga and some have come here, I think, also, and they're looking to the devotees for some sort of solace to help them through this difficult time. The scandal was exposed, and consequently many of the students are upset because of his dishonesty and immoral behaviour, unbecoming a so-called spiritual teacher. He was really not following properly. That's what should be. I won't go into the gaudy details. It's quite difficult. He claims to have been a victim of lusty desires. I met with him, and he explained that he was put into a position of power and control over his students, and he misused their trust. And even though it was apparently that these people were consenting adults, it wasn't anything to do with children or anything like this. These were women that came to him and fully consented to the sexual act. Still, he said that he was, a victim of this situation. Plus, he said to me, well, I never claimed that I was a celibate. And I said, but you're dressed as a sannyasi. So apparently in their tradition, that's not a major thing. So And also he said, you know, I don't require that any of my students remain celibate as well. But the thing is that, and one of the excuses also that he gave was that, well, actually in our tradition, and some of you may be aware of that, I follow the tantric path, which is utilizing sex for elevation. I said to him, well, you know, sex is sex. And I mean, I know how you want to describe it, is that's it. And he, but I said, and if this was the case, why didn't you put this in your advertisements, in any of your brochures? Why didn't your students know about that? You know, that if this is your path, I mean, you had other teachers in the past through Osho and Rajneesh that were advertising, you know, the way to enlightenment is through sense enjoyment, especially sex life. I said, why didn't you advertise that? Why did you keep it a secret from your disciples and from your followers? So he didn't have an answer to that. Anyway, he confided in me that he had made the wrong decisions, that it was a very difficult situation that he was put in, and he wouldn't abuse his students anymore. And he says he's truly sorry. He's asked me to help him and counsel him over this period of time and assist in the process of healing for the welfare of his students. So that's why I'm making a presentation to you all, because, you know, these kids are going to be coming. If you hear of someone at the Sunday feast or a Saturday feast or whatever, and they say, have you had anything to do with meditation before? And someone may say, well, especially Tita, you know Achyuta very well, right? If they say, you know, well, I used to go to the Shiva ashram, then at least you know how to handle this. You handle it with a great delicacy. You don't become fanatical. Just see your spiritual master is a demon. He's, you know, horrible, blah, blah, blah. You should just take to Krishna consciousness. That's not the way to approach it. You explain it like I explained it. He had suffered some difficulty and, you know, like that. So, without understanding, this is the point. He made wrong decisions because he didn't have full knowledge of Krishna. So, Srila Prabhupada said in the purport, an impersonalist can become a qualified brahmana, but not a spiritual master, until he's promoted to the stage of a Vaishnava, a devotee of God. And what does that mean, to be a devotee of God? To be a Hari Bhakta. To be a devotee of God means to understand that actually everything belongs to God. Everything belongs to God. Without this understanding, even a teacher of some sort of spiritual path, even Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, to learn a little bit about transcendence is at least something, to learn something about spiritual life. But from the fault and misleading teachings of the impersonalists, Mayavadis, because they believe that we're all one, and actually I am God, then actually everybody becomes a prospect for my enjoyment. Everybody becomes a prospect for my enjoyment. You don't see another person as belonging to Krishna. You actually see somebody else for my enjoyment. Hence, the situation that arrived in his situation, where he is the guru of an institution and he has hundreds of students. If anybody's been there, you know, it's packed with people there. And so, you know, he's charismatic. And Krishna made the arrangements that somebody came to his door and said, hey, Swamiji, like that. And so, you know, because he had this understanding, well, actually, I am God. I'm not fully realizing of that yet, but it's I'm quite right to enjoy this person. And so this is a wrong interpretation, wrong understanding of Vedic wisdom. So thereby it's not suitable that he's the teacher. So in this tradition of Mayavad, there's no commitment to vows, renunciation, a promise made to the Lord who is the origin and owner of everything, as is pointed out here in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's Vedic wisdom. Now, you know, we don't want to be holier than thou in that, you know, we've seen some sensual fall downs within our movement. That's there for everybody to see. And basically we can understand that even in those people that have come to Krishna consciousness, there's still some remnants of this impersonal understanding, not completely understanding yet that actually everything belongs to Krishna. And in the same token, I wasn't going to mention much about that, but in the same token, in our community there is, in the broader Hindu community, but also within our Krishna consciousness community, there is also this issue of family violence and abuse of women within the family situation. And again, this is that same impersonalist understanding. My wife is my property. I own this lady, or I own this man. It's rare that it happens that way. And so I can abuse her. And this is a very, very dangerous sort of thing. Yesterday we had the sad situation where this young girl, beautiful girl, 23 years old, married to this man, was killed, murdered, because, you know, whatever, family violence, she didn't do what he wanted or whatever. And there are incidents even, and we may say, well, these are people that are outside our movement, but actually even within our movement, there is this violence towards women. And we have to be very mindful that you have to understand that if you are married, your wife is given to you to look after, but she is the property of Krishna. She is not your property. And so thereby you have to be very mindful to make sure she's looked after properly. And then that will be a great thing. So we've seen that. So there's even within our movement self-centeredness. So selfishness, and this is the material disease, selfishness. I want to enjoy. So there's selfishness. You're not the only one that matters. The ultimate importance is irrespective of what damages it causes to others. So this situation that's happened in the Shiva ashram has caused so much controversy and so much pain and suffering for those people that have placed their trust in their spiritual teacher. You know, and it's just that those sensual acts have destroyed what faith they had in him. So the point is that if a person has a deadly disease, he doesn't cover it up with bandages. Like if there is a disease with us, we don't cover it up with bandages. You go to the source of the disease. You go right to the nub of it. And we're unfortunately living in a society where everything is usually bandaged up. You know, they don't really deal with the situation. And they make some superficial exchange so that there's no problem anymore immediately. We have to come to the point of not blaming everybody else for our problems. Haribol. But we have to see it ourselves. We have to point the fingers back at us. We should know that we are all created by God and we have a responsibility 24 hours a day to live a godly life. And that the God in our life is within our hearts and within every atom. And so this is where I've just been mentioning about the Shiva ashram and how we should be dealing with the devotees that are going to be coming to the temple for some spiritual solace, and how we deal with them with compassion and sensitivity. So the sole purpose, as is pointed out in this purport here, is that the purpose of life is self-realization. We have to become self-realized. Aham bija pradapita. So this Krishna says that I am the father of every living entity, and it is our duty to fulfill the desires of that supreme father. Krishna is our father and our mother, and that's Vedic wisdom. We do what dad wants. We do what Krishna wants. And human life is meant for that. But because we have invested in service in Krishna, anything that we've done in the service of Krishna is never lost. However, if we invest in material things, it's gone in a minute. And you may be a big, big ashram leader, big, big swami one day, and then all of a sudden, when it's revealed that actually you're not so big and you've had some difficulty, all of a sudden everything is gone. Ashram's gone, position is gone, situation is gone, which is really, really sad. So therefore, in the eyes of God, our first and foremost responsibility is that we personally pursue a path of self-realization and teach everyone the wisdom of the Vedas, Krishna consciousness, and become the mouth of the Lord. All other things are important only to the extent as to how we can utilize everything that we have in this material world in the service to God. We have wealth, We have education, qualifications, and so on and so forth, but we should use it in Krishna service. Everything should be used in Krishna service. And we should use it in the path of self-realization and for the betterment, the spiritual betterment of humanity. This is the most vital thing. Now, Prabhupada actually wanted that the Krishna Consciousness Society becomes a society of brahmanas. Brahmanas. And it doesn't matter, as is pointed out in the purport, it doesn't matter which varna you're into, you know, whether you're a kshatriya or a brahminical person or a vaishya or a sutra. We're all part of the same body. But Prabhupada, anyone, any caste can become a brahmana, which means to speak Vedic wisdom. So there are four regulative principles in the Srimad Bhagavatam described, and they are described as the pillars of sinful life. No illicit sex. If we have illicit sex, it's guaranteed that you'll suffer even worse as an animal or even worse because of karmic reaction. You'll cause torturous conditions in your mind and your body. So this is if you go to the path, like at the moment when I met with Swamiji, emotionally it's completely shaken him. And he broke down, he cried, you know, and it was just traumatic. So these sort of things are there. There's no escape. If you engage in intoxication, the karmic reaction will cover you with illusion, with ignorance, and again cause tremendous suffering. Gambling is a whimsical way of taking the property of God and utilizing it in your own horrible way, utilizing it for so many activities instead of helping others. And finally, meat eating. Every bit of pain that a living entity suffers because of your satisfaction, you will in turn have to suffer. And this is an absolute fact. So the point of a brahmana is that they want to help humanity. They want to help the suffering humanity. So if we're actually concerned about helping someone who's suffering, we have to teach him how to live a clean life and how to live in harmony with the laws of God. So we ask people to follow these directions and not be a hypocrite. Not be a hypocrite. Don't say something and then don't do it yourself. You have to be fully aware. Krishna is witnessing everything you do, so you have to be completely powerful. And it is the duty of everyone who is a leader in position or who have dependents, or who have people taking guidance from them, to show them the way that they won't have to suffer again, showing them how to live in harmony with God's laws. Now you may say, well, within ISKCON, I'm not a leader. But every single devotee that has come in contact with Krishna consciousness, that has taken up some aspect of Krishna consciousness in their lives, is a leader within the society, because you are the mouthpiece of the Lord. You are speaking Vedic wisdom. Even if it's to a limited capacity, if you're a very young devotee, you are still a leader in our society. We have these things about Obama and Tony Abbott and so on and so forth. But you know what? The people that come to the Bhagavatam class, come here to the temple, that sit here and listen to the Vedic wisdom, you are actually the leaders of this country. You are the ones that people can come to for real knowledge, to emancipate you from this material world. So Krishna consciousness, nectar in the beginning. I just wanted to mention this as well. When you first come to Krishna consciousness, Maya, the personification of the illusory energy, doesn't seem so attractive. It's not, you know. Because actually, interestingly enough, she doesn't pay that much attention to us. Sometimes you may say, oh, you know, I'm affected by Maya. Actually, she hasn't even started. When we come to Krishna consciousness, she doesn't care much for us. Because she knows that actually at least 95% of people that come to some aspect of spiritual life leave shortly after. They don't last very long. And that's due to their own insincerity. They have got some idea, but then they leave. Prabhupada said, you know, when some devotees left in the early days, you know, don't be surprised if people leave. Be surprised when they stay. So Maya Devi knows most likely, as far as she goes, she doesn't have to do anything against this in the early days. And as you leave on your own, because spiritual life becomes troublesome after some time, you know, like we could be in the ashram here and it's, you know, I don't want to sleep. Like in the early days, we used to have to sleep on the floor, you know. We didn't have beds or anything. And the early, oh, I can't sleep on the floor, or, you know, I can't get up, oh, I can't have a cold shower or whatever. So you will leave on our own accord. Or there are so many enticements, You know, we're perhaps doing Sankirtan or something, and there's a cake shop, and you see chocolate eclairs. This was my big one, chocolate eclairs. Oh, God, there's a chocolate eclair. Hare Krishna. So, you know, there are so many enticements, and some people, you know, the chocolate eclairs were too good, and they left. So there are all these different things, and there's media enticements all the time, pushing. So Maya doesn't have to do too much at all, you know. We just have to be on Facebook, and all of a sudden, I was on Facebook, and I was just checking out some of our friends and writing some comments, and all of a sudden, there's somehow or other, there was this post come up, and there's a totally naked woman. It's like that. There's some material energy is just right in your face, you know. So she doesn't have to do that much. So therefore, when you first come to Krishna consciousness, Maya doesn't take you very seriously at all. You fall away anyway. But she lets you do your own thing, you know, just as you like. And if we chant holy name, she doesn't take that too seriously. Oh yes, they're nicely chanting. So just like a parent, Radhana Swami gives the example of just like a parent. A parent, sometimes a kid says, I'm never going to eat spinach again. I vow I'll never eat spinach again. You know, people that have kids, you know, they say those things. I vow I'm never going to do that again. And the parent just goes, yeah, sure. No worries. That's okay. So when we first come to Krishna consciousness, we make our vows. I'm never going to have illicit sex. I'm never going to gamble. I'm never going to... Maya's going, sure. No worries. That's okay. Just like a parent. So Maya's duty is sorting out the sincere from the insincere. So, but after many years, deepening our commitment and deepening our determination takes on, and taking on of responsibilities in Krishna consciousness for making propaganda, that actually threatens Maya. That actually, when we're actually grounded in our Krishna consciousness, and when we actually speak this wisdom, when we become the mouthpiece of the Viradrupa of Krishna, then Maya says, hello there, who is this? Raja Krishna. You're doing some amazing preaching out there, you know, you're traveling all over the world and you're doing so much good work and everything. Let me now look at, now I'm interested. So Krishna makes that. Then Maya starts taking us very seriously because we're the spokesperson of Krishna. We are becoming Brahmanas. And then she starts planning a major attack against us. And we've seen this in our movement also. Maya places so many things. And she can attack you from outside, a knock on the door. Oh, Prabhu, you give such a nice class, blah, 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 blah. Why don't you meet with me somewhere there? Gone. Or, you know, she'll plan a major attack from within, either within or without. All of a sudden, the mind starts going. Our best friend, boy, you're a really good devotee. You do such great service. You know, you really don't have to chant your rounds today. You're like that. Gotcha! Maya attacks. So it seems that Krishna consciousness was so easy in the beginning when you're new because you were not a threat. But later, she'll have your way. Maya will just let you get away for a while and then she'll come. So, but if you stick, as the years go on, if you stick with Krishna consciousness and show Maya, you know, that you're not scared of her ferocious teeth, that you face her head on, then actually you start to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. She has to do this. This is Maya's service to her, to the Lord, you know. And she doesn't want to see you fall down. She doesn't want to see you, not pass the test. She wants to see you pass the test. But she is a hard taskmaster. She's really a tough lady. And so thereby, sometimes we have to really take stock. And this is one of the reasons why within Krishna consciousness, we receive so much respect. Senior devotees. They are, you know, like at the moment they're making a big deal about the VC winners, Victoria Cross, men that have gone overseas and fought for this country and have exhibited some sort of heroism. and have come back and they've given them the VC, you know, the highest honour for a hero, for fighting. And it was just on the news the other day that they're now going to put the five VC, the current VC holders, on stamps, you know, to eulogise them, to give them a great honour. So in the same way, senior devotees that have been in the movement for a long period of time, you can understand that Maya has attacked them, but they've won the battle. It's a war against Maya, and she's got so many weapons. But in the same token, Krishna consciousness, we have the weapons to fight that as well. And those people that have lasted within Krishna consciousness, they are actually worthy of our respect and our honour, and we should treat them like war heroes. So the reason why I'm saying this is that, as I said, I've got quite a few things I want to mention. Because of the 50th anniversary that's coming up, the 40th anniversary of this temple is coming up, we're inviting senior devotees from all over the world that initially started this centre, you know. Senior people like Korma Prabhu, Charu, who's got his centre in Utah with Vaibhavi, Gauramandala Bhumi, Amoga, senior devotees, Harisori Prabhu is coming. And I know Harisori. He was the GBC here. He was a powerful teacher, and he still is, you know. But Maya placed obstacles in front of him. And sometimes he was wounded, but then he came back and he fought back. He patched up and came back and strong. Same with people like Bhavananda. I mean, he had an atomic bomb dropped on him. Maya just dropped an atomic bomb on him. But still, he dusted off, patched himself up, understood his weaknesses, and now he's doing, with Sadbhush Prabhu, my dear God brother, he's building this most incredible temple. We see him there, you know. So these are heroes. These are our heroes. And that's why within Krishna consciousness we respect longevity. Because it's not easy, you know. Sometimes the devotee thinks, oh, this is easy, Krishna consciousness is easy. In the early days, that may be. In the early days of your Krishna consciousness, you're all bliss. But then Maya will attack you. Either physically or even philosophically. Sometimes, you know, you're going along and you're chanting very nicely and everything is really rosy, and then someone will come in and talk to you in your ear about some Mayavad philosophy or some deviant philosophy, not in line with what Prabhupada is speaking. And all of a sudden you become affected by that. And that's Maya slipping in, saying, hey, there's my avenue. We've got to be so careful. Always stick with the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada. Always stick with his teachings. Always completely down the line. So this is really a point that we have to mention. So when we see a person like that have fallen away in Krishna consciousness, you know, even a leader like Shankarananda in Shiva Ashram, we humbly say to ourselves, there but for the grace of Krishna go I. It could have been me. It could have been me, but it's not. Not yet. Maya is still waiting. She's planning an attack. Be always on the guard. So Prabhupada was, there's an incident where Prabhupada, he used to get so angry just on this point of sexuality and a sexual enticement. Prabhupada was so angry when the devotees left him in a room with a woman. Did you know that? He said, how dare you? They arranged an interview. Prabhupada was there, and this elderly lady, not even a voluptuous woman or anything like that, but an elderly lady came to see Prabhupada. And they said, oh, Prabhupada, there we go. And they closed the door. After the meeting, Prabhupada chastised his disciples. How dare you leave me with that woman? Not that there was anything wrong with the woman, but how dare you put me in a compromising position? So thereby within ISKCON, you know, if we're having a meeting with some lady in our leadership or something, we never do it in private. A member of the opposite sex, you always keep the doors open. Everything is respectable. Everything is moral. Not immoral, not secret little clandestine operations. We have to be very moral in our dealings and follow the principles properly. And if we do that, then we're actually leaders. We're the mouthpiece of Krishna. And these have to be followed. Prabhupada says, I just wanted to read you a purport from the Bhagavad Gita in connection with this. It's Bhagavad Gita 264. But a person free from all attachment and aversion and are able to control their senses through regulative principles of freedom can obtain complete mercy of the Lord. And Prabhupada's purport is, it's already explained that one may externally control the senses by some artificial process, but unless the senses are engaged in transcendental service of the Lord, there is every chance of a fall. Although the person in full Krishna consciousness may be on a sensual plane, because of being in Krishna consciousness, he has no attachment to sensual activities. The Krishna conscious person is concerned only with the satisfaction of Krishna and nothing else. Therefore, he is transcendental to all attachments and detachments. Transcendental to all attachments and detachments. If Krishna wants, the devotee can do anything which is ordinarily undesirable. So we can, you know, we can go anywhere we want to. Even in the old days, we used to do Sankirtan. Sankirtan, both men and women. And we used to go to brothels and think nothing of it. We'd have a roll of paintings and we'd go. We used to have to sell paraphernalia. We didn't have our wonderful Indian community to support this temple, so we used to have to make ends meet and pay the mortgage and pay for everything this temple has by doing a paraphernalia sale. And one of the things we used to do was paintings, beautiful paintings, oil paintings. And so we'd go to different places and solicit people, would you like to buy a painting? And so sometimes we used to have marathons, and it was really incumbent upon us to get a lot of Lakshmi together at that time. And so we would go everywhere, everywhere, to the extent that we would go to brothels, places of illicit sexual activity. And we would be in there and say, anybody want to buy a painting? Do you think the devotees were disturbed? Not one thing. I remember going into a brothel and I'd be in the waiting room and the girls would be there and I'd be going, so these are our paintings, you know. And funny thing was at that stage also we were in disguise and we used to have these wigs on, right? Okay, so I'm a hot-blooded sort of person as it is, you know. I mean, I'd get hot if I... Yeah, anyway... We have to wear these wigs, you know, and it used to be something like 30 degrees, 35 degrees, you know, and you'd be perspiring like anything, you know, because you had this wig on your head. But anyway, we couldn't care less, and we're going through the paintings, you know. Oh, I like that one, I like that one. And then a lady would say, you know, oh, I really like that one. Hang on a tick, I'll be back in 15 minutes. So she would go out, do a job, come back and buy the painting. So we were doing anything like that. So we just were so transcendental to that whole situation, we engaged everybody in that service. So even a devotee can do anything which is ordinarily undesirable. Normally as a devotee we wouldn't go into a place like that. And if Krishna does not want, he shall not do that which would ordinarily have been done for his own satisfaction. Therefore, to act or not to act is within the is within his control, because he acts only under the direction of Krishna, and this consciousness is the causeless mercy of the Lord, which a devotee can achieve in spite of his being attached to sensual platform. So even we still have material desires, sensual desires, we don't practice that, we don't entertain that, because we're servants of Krishna. That's a true Brahmana. It's not that we're without sensual attraction. We have it there. It's always there. You know, like when I was on Facebook, you know, I'm a man. And I'm on Facebook and all of a sudden there's a beautiful woman there. Everything, all of a sudden, wow, whoa. And then you have to pull back and think, okay, I'm a Krishna conscious devotee. So there's need for discipline. That going, whoa, hang on. Don't go any further. That's discipline. So one has to follow the regulative principles of spiritual life and can attain the complete mercy of the Lord and thus be free from that attraction and aversion. The regulative principles are in two categories, yama and niyama. Things that should be done and things that should not be done. Srila Rupa Goswami has said, one may accept those things favorable for the advancement of spiritual knowledge and reject those things which are not favorable. To accept what is favorable and to reject what's unfavorable is our spiritual process. That's our process. This means we must be disciplined in our life. We have to be disciplined. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, it says that there are so many disciplines that are given. Number one, we must avoid these things that we must avoid strictly. And there are some things that we must accept. Lord Chaitanya says that, first of all, we must not associate with sinful people. So we try and avoid sinful people. We must keep our association with saintly people. So as much as possible, we stay with the devotees. We must avoid intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, meat eating. We must avoid causing harm to other living entities. We must avoid speaking worldly topics that simply lead to envy and greed, you know. We must accept spiritual topics. We must accept the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. We must accept holy association. When a guru or a spiritual teacher comes here, we really have to place a lot of emphasis, get as much association with Raja Krishna as you can. These sort of things are very important. And these form a disciplined life. This is what we're about, a disciplined life. So yoga, you know, we teach yoga at Urban Yoga and so on and so forth. Yoga actually means to discipline the mind and the senses. That's what yoga actually means. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 261, Tani Savani Samyayam Yukta Asita Matparaha Vasehi Yasyendriyani Tasya Prajan Prashistita. One who restrains his senses and fixes his consciousness on me is known as a person of steady intelligence. Not factually, in every field of life, if we are not willing to discipline ourselves, we will progress, our progress will be great. And discipline is the key to life. In every facet of life, there's a question of discipline. Recently, we now, in the sports capital of the world, Melbourne, we've got so many different sporting activities going on. There's the cricket. I guess none of you knew that the cricket was on, right? There's the cricket, there's the soccer, and the tennis, the Australian Open, of course. But, I mean, these guys, when you actually see these guys to achieve what they want to achieve, to be a world leader, you know, I mean, they have to discipline themselves so much, so powerfully. And to do that discipline, there has to be pain. They have to go through pain to achieve that higher status. And that's the difference between humans, Shreyas and Preyas. You know, an animal simply concerned about is what he immediately needs. An animal never philosophically understands that this is right or this is wrong. An animal, when he feels like it, he wants to eat, he eats. When he wants to mate, he mates. When he wants to sleep, he sleeps. But a human is meant for more than that. It's meant for, you know, immediately feeling our mind and senses to understand what we have and how to achieve the highest goal in life. That's what a human is about. So that, in essence, coming back to this point of a brahmana, that's the difference between a Goswami and a Godas. A Goswami is someone that can control their senses, and a Godas is just like, let it all hang out. Who cares? You know? So it's not a question of whether there is desire or not. We all have desires. They'll always be there, but it's how you deal with those desires. You always have desires, but it's how you deal with those desires, whether you act on those desires. If one has an impulse towards sinful activities or activities that are not conducive to spiritual life, then you have to be able to draw them in, control them. When the impulse comes, if you're willing to say no, then you're a Goswami. Irrespective of whether you're wearing saffron, whether you're wearing a sari, whether you're a grihastha, whether you're old, whether you're young, when this impulse comes for sinful activities, if you're able to say, no, I don't want it, then you're a Goswami. Then you're a brahmana. Then you're following Vedic wisdom. Then you're able to. And it's that continuous saying, no, I don't want material. It's not easy. And we won't always have the strength to do it. There will be times when Maya got the better of you. You lost the battle. But that doesn't mean that you then become remorseful, because then she'll attack you on that level as well. When there has been a difficulty, when there has been some sort of compromise with Maya, and you haven't said no, then You know, it's not like she'll come in then and say, see, you've said no. You've said yes to my enticements. And now, you know, you're not a devotee anymore. You better leave. And Prabhupada said, no matter what your problem is, no matter how fallen you may feel yourself to be, never lose the association of devotees and never stop chanting Hare Krishna. In due course of time, everything will be made clear. So you may have had struggle, you may have lost some battles, but dust off and say, the next battle I'm going to win. The next time I'm going to win. This is the attitude of a devotee, of a Goswami. So a Brahmana is a true Swami, a true Goswami. One may ask, that was an interesting thing. This is the other point that I wanted to bring up. Sometimes we're asked, you know, what do I do for service, Prabhu, you know? I want to do some service, especially when people come for the first time. What service can I do? And then the other question is, how do I know how much service is enough? You know, sometimes we put under pressure, you know, oh, Prabhu, I've got too much service. No, hang on, I can't do anymore, you know. So how much service, you know, how do you render service and how much service can you take on? So in the same token as these great athletes that endure a lot of pain, there's a saying, if it doesn't hurt, it's not enough. Okay? So when these guys train, like for tennis and soccer and all that kind of stuff, when they do their training, they train themselves, they discipline themselves so much till it hurts. That's what's required of devotees as far as your service level. It's not that, you know, pain physically, but you take on so much that it's actually sometimes an inconvenience. Really, it hurts. So they say, you know, there's that saying, no pain, no gain. So we have to actually really work on that. Whether it's your time, you know, I've put in so much time. Oh, you're asking me to do the deities again. I'll do it. I prefer to have slept in. That was my sleep-in day. And now you're asking me to dress the deities again. No pain, no gain. And if you can actually, you know, see it in that way, you know, oh, Prabhu, you're asking me to clean the top floor again, you know, the prasadam room, I've done it 3 days in a row, and you're asking me again? No pain, no gain. But if you did it, there's the greatest satisfaction. Again, you move up in your Krishna consciousness. Again, you make a storehouse of those activities. So whether it's your energy, or whether it's your wealth, sometimes you're asked to contribute. No pain, no gain. We're wanting to get this kitchen built. We're wanting to receive financial support for that. The government has said, here's $500,000. Get your people to match it and more. We have to do this. We have to somehow stretch our limits. How much can we give as far as welfare is concerned? And it's not for any sense gratification that we're wanting this. What are we wanting to build the kitchen for? Not that we can sit there and fry our chapatis nicely. Oh, we're so nicely. Now I can cook my chapatis and my sabji and we'll eat so nicely. That's not our concern. We want to build this kitchen so that we can have further food for life, so we can have further crossways. We want to open up another 3 crossway centres. What for? To give people prasadam and to give people Vedic wisdom. That's what we want it for. So we want to stretch everybody to the max to give from their wealth. It's not your wealth, it's Krishna's. If you can give it, give it. No pain, no gain. That's what we have to do. Whatever we can do is an offering to God, is an offering in compassion to others in the service to God. That's a Brahmana. In compassion for others in the service of God. So if it doesn't hurt, you're not doing enough in your service in Krishna consciousness. If it's not hurting a little bit, you're not doing enough. Go to your temple president, go to your manager and say, what more can I do? Which brings me up to another point. And this is the Rath Yatra. Remember, no pain, no gain. I need volunteers. I need people to help. I need people to be part of the face painting, the henna. I want people to be there with all manner of the prasadam distribution, the watermelon distribution. So many different things are there that we need people to decorate the altars. No pain, no gain if we all put in together. You know, you see Prabhu Das, he'll be there from 4 o'clock in the morning till 12 o'clock at night, just organizing things and doing things, you know. Great soul. So we have to be like that. We have to take on that legacy. If we're not causing a little discomfort for ourselves, we're not doing enough. So with this thing, so I'm going to be putting up a notice board later on today of, you know, how I usually do that, the Rath Yatra service thing. I want everybody to put their names down. And not just one, yes, I'll help with the face painting. No, I can do this and I can do that and I can do that. It's going to cause me pain, but I'm going to make gain. That's what we're about. So that's going to happen. Otherwise, we're talking about compassion, we're talking about love, we're talking about service. You know, what's the use of sacrifice in love? You know, that's got meaning. That's what it's all about. If we love someone, we want to serve them. We want to do something for them. You know, that's what it's about. So human life is meant for sacrifice. So when we discipline ourselves by following the regulative principles, by chanting regularly, by reading the scriptures, making a point of reading the scriptures, and may I say that that is probably the biggest thing that we should do in our battle against Maya. It's something that's sort of neglected a little bit. You know, oh yeah, Prabhu, I've chanted my 16 rounds. But the reading has to be an essential part, because then the mind is pacified. The mind becomes absorbed in the pastimes of Krishna. And then when Maya approaches, when she starts showing her teeth and starts attacking you, you've got that armory of Prabhupada's books that says, hang on a tick, I read this morning about this. And you'd be surprised how Krishna makes the arrangements, you know, either before or after, you know, of an attack. And so you'd be able to counteract that. So reading is really important. Associating with saintly people. As much as you can, associate with God brothers and sisters that are fired up. And sacrifice our mind peace. Through these disciplines, we can sacrifice our mind peacefully. You'll become peaceful, and our mind will become still. And by the mercy of God, he reveals himself through a clear mind, an open mind, and then great wealth will be distributed from to our heart in the form of love and compassion for all living entities and in all orders of society by the mercy of Krishna. So this is what we have to do. One has to understand and pursue the principles of Vedic wisdom, because Prabhupada wanted us to be brahminical. And then we're so fortunate, you know. We have the greatest fortune, and we'll have peace in this life and also in the next, in the spiritual world. So I just wanted to get those points across. I hope that that's understanding for everybody. I hope it wasn't too offensive, but that I needed to get that across. There are some issues that are very important in this society at the present state, so just have those principles that, of striving for a brahminical quality in one's life. Okay, sorry. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu.
One question, one point. You were saying about collecting money in places you wouldn't normally. My common devotee was complaining that one of the devotees was accepting money from gangsters and from bookmakers.
Yeah.
And he said, no, this is fine. Well, they've got that money, it's bad. When they give it to us, for Krishna, it becomes good.
Absolutely.
We get the blessing, they get the blessing.
Absolutely. If you're not in a position of criticizing, if you're not in a position to actually rectify the situation, in the same token, you don't turn a blind eye to it as well. If there's genuine evidence, then you go to an authority. Okay, someone that you can trust, someone that, you know, you can confide in. But the most important thing, and this is where the power of prayer comes in, you can actually change their deviant mentality by praying for them. You know, just as I'm praying for my friend Shankarananda Swami, I'm praying for him that he stays to this vow, that he's not going to do this again. You know, because, I mean, the man has a sentiment towards Krishna consciousness as well. Many times I've been with him and he said, Bhakta, when I'm with you, I'm a Vaishnav. But when you're not there, then I'm a Mayavadi. And so then in his heart he said, Bhakta, can you come and counsel me? You know what that means. He wants to take on some sort of Vaishnava devotional situation. He wants the association of a devotee. Not that I'm qualified, but I'm carrying Srila Prabhupada and my Guru Maharaj with me, you know, Lord Chaitanya, as best I can. So, yeah. But you pray for him.
But my point being, brother, they're in that position, isn't it under them to step down from being the same?
Sorry?
Isn't it a duty of them to save and step down from the position rather than continue their...
Maybe. You're not in a position to judge that, though. There are higher authorities that can judge that. What's best for them? You know, like even in Shankarananda Swami's situation, you know, I wouldn't recommend that he goes away. And he said, Bhakta, what should I do? Should I leave? Should I go back to America? I said, no. You have to work this through. You have to be humble. You have to pray for forgiveness from your students. You have to be humble. You have to understand what you did is wrong. I said, in the same token, you may be a Mayavadi. You may be teaching your philosophy. I didn't say it like that, but I said, you are still bringing people from a hedonistic lifestyle. If you go to this ashram, and Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita too, you know, at least if you're meditating and doing something, it's good. So in the same token, you know, he can stay there and be honest, you know, and then rectify the situation. But we have to understand our position, you know, as a neophyte or a younger devotee, you know, when you're dealing with an older devotee, because, I mean, as I said, this attack of Maya, she's putting the boots in to anybody that's really advanced and been in Krishna consciousness for a long time. You, from my perspective as a younger devotee, well, a neophyte devotee anyway, you know, you can't really judge what attack has happened to this person. So it's hard to judge and criticize straight away. You have to see it on a compassionate, broader level, and really just pray for them. And so, if you pray to Krishna also, please let the situation be rectified. And pray to Krishna saying, if you want me to, you know, be part of this or to reveal this to somebody, you make the arrangements. Krishna will make the arrangements. Don't take it on yourself. Krishna will make the arrangements. Is that okay? Okay. Yeah, Prabhu. Sorry. If you've got money, you do it. If you've got extra surplus money and you can help with the temple, then do it. But in the same token, if you haven't, then don't think, oh, you know, like we're asking people to contribute to this. Try and find out people that you know that have got some money and would like to contribute. Like I said to Michael the other day, I had a meeting with Nick Gatto. Anybody know Nick Gatto? Mick Gatto. And he's a boxing promoter. He's a colourful personality. You know, he was charged with murder. And he's sort of like I don't think he'd mind me saying that he's sort of like a gangster figure. But he's given $50,000 to Father Bob's facility, and I've asked, can I have a meeting with Nick? I've met him before. He's a very nice man. To see if he'll give a contribution. I haven't got money myself, but I'm making some arrangements to see if I can get other people to contribute to it. That's what I meant. Does that sort of answer your question?
Yeah.
No, you have to also, you know, I mean, you're also coming into the Grihastha Ashram. you have to look at, you know, you have to have your finances, you have to have your own. So there's a level of balance, but then in the same token, there is also, you know, you don't want it in excess. Prabhupada used to say, just have enough to keep body and soul together. So that means having a house, paying for the rent, having the food, so on and so forth. And then the rest you can give, you know, as best you can. But Krishna will work it out for you. Krishna will work it out. Just have this consciousness, whatever I can do, I'll do for Prabhupada. But you have to also be mindful. You have to have a house, and you have to set up, and you have to look after. It has to be there, you know. Okay? You just use intelligence like that. Prabhu?
Just a small point. When you were mentioning about 40th anniversary,
yeah.
I would think of Chitta Hari, Pratapna.
Yeah, all coming.
Dedhama.
They're all coming. Ram Prasad, all the heroes, all the VCs.
Yeah.
Victoria, no, what would we call it? Victoria. The KCs. The Krishna Conscious Cross. The heroes. I mean, they fought a battle. Maya didn't want to have a temple here in Australia. Come on. She didn't want this knowledge to go all over Australia. She didn't want us to be part of, you know, the Australia Day Festival, you know, and chant and dance in front of thousands and thousands of people. That's the last thing that she wants. But somehow or other, by the dedication of these great heroes, now we've got an opportunity and we blast them, you know, with the holy name of the Lord. The potency of the holy name of the Lord is so amazing. We take it for granted, but the power of the holy name pierces through everything. You know, you talk about atomic bombs and all this kind of stuff. The holy name is so powerful. It's transcendental. It's none other than Krishna. We're shooting Krishna's arrows to everybody. Wham, wham, you know. And somehow in their heart, something softens. Something is enlivened. That's the job of a brahmana. That's the job of all of us, you know. Yeah, it's amazing. So yeah, they're all coming. So we have to make them welcome. We have to respect them. We do anything for them to keep them comfortable and so on and so forth. With great respect. One more? Yeah. Any ladies got a question at all? No? Bhakti, you got any comments you want to make? Okay. Yeah, probably.
George Prabhu in Melbourne last year, that was a town.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Can I just...
Go? I have a comment about this. If you feel disturbed about someone, devotee, in discrepancies with devotees, as you're saying, go to an authority, they can rectify it. Please do not discuss it amongst your friends.
Yeah, good point.
Wife,
thanks.
Or anybody else, because you become more offensive than the person, the subject that you're discussing. I've seen it so many times before, but this village talk goes on, armchair philosophy, where you justify your own fall downs by pointing the finger at someone else and saying, this person's a dog. And then with this Ram Guitar, this village talk, then it just strengthens the weakness of this other person you're discussing it with, and then you both fall down. Not the whole community falls down, and we've seen this time and time again. So if you do see discrepancies amongst the devotees, go to the temple present, keep it confidential. If he doesn't give you satisfaction, go to the GBC, but don't make it an open subject. Once it's out there, it's out there, it's gone. It's like standing on a chimney and throwing feathers in the wind. Once, you can't get them back. So please, if there are discrepancies amongst the devotees and you feel concerned for them, go to the right authority. Do not discuss it amongst the devotees, you know, especially the devotees are not able to take that discussion. It just strengthens their
yep.
You know,
that's from one of our heroes. He's one of our long-time heroes. He's got a VC.
We've had a temple room full of devotees like we've got now. We want to keep them this way and
multiply.
Absolutely. We've had a full temple room with devotees and a lot of them are gone because of this kind of...
Yep.
Please do not talk amongst the devotees. You know, don't make them subject of your armchair philosophy.
And that's why I mentioned earlier in the class, Gana, just in regards to the devotees that are going to, the students of Sankarananda Swami that may be coming, to just be really gentle and peaceful and give them support as opposed to criticizing their guru. He's making the necessary rectifications. Everybody can be rectified. I have to stop here.
Yeah? Understand our own position.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to put yourself on a pedestal compared to four.
Yep. Thanks, Gail. I have to stop. Yes, Melody. It was a question from a ladies. We need it. Yeah.
No, just wondering, because on that point, like it's saying, like, there's such an emphasis on associating with the degrees.
Yeah. situation like that, you have to be a soldier. You have to turn around and say, and you don't have to be holier than thou and everything, you just say, Prabhu, I really don't want to talk about this. If you make a stand, it may be a little uncomfortable. Again, no pain, no gain. If you have to make a little bit of a statement saying, look, this is really Gram Katan, like Gyan is saying, you know, I really don't want to be part of this. I'm sorry, I love you, but I just can we talk about something else? You have, if it's coming to you, Krishna's talking to you, then take that direction. Okay? You just have to take that direction. It's for their benefit and for your benefit. Just say, listen, please, I'm not advising you, but I can't listen to this anymore. Do you mind we not talk about that? I love you, I'm not trying to be holier than thou, but I just need to, it's not good for me to listen to this. Simple. You got a comment, Prabhu?
No, it's not good for the other person who's speaking, so
no.
Out of concern we can try to indicate that it's not good for all of us, so
yeah.
Let's try to avoid, rather than it's not just good for me.
There's so much else we can talk about. Mm-hmm. If you're reading Prabhupada's books, you know, any time you pick up anything of Prabhupada's books, you know, there's so much stuff you can talk about, the pastimes of Krishna. Yeah, and it's never tiring. I mean, how many times if you watch a class by Radhana Swami, you know, and he starts relating a story about Krishna, and you've heard it 100 times, the same story. But when he's talking, it's like, it's ever fresh. It's like, oh, far out, what happens then? You know what's going to happen then. But what happens then, Maharaj? Do you want to know what happens then? You know how he goes? Really want to know what happens then? Yeah. You know it, but you just want to hear him say it, you know. So there's so much nectar in these books, you don't need anything. Gram Katara is nothing, you know. Does that make sense? So reading Prabhupada's books is essential. So we fill our mind with this Krishna conscious transcendental topics. So that fills your day, you know. And when you're having breakfast together, you know, you confer, you know, well, what did you read yesterday? Well, I read this far out section where Prabhupada was talking about this and this and this and this. You know, oh really, I must look that up, you know, and it's like cross references, you know. And that's what we're about. Like somebody was telling me the other day, and it's a thing that we used to have here also, during breakfast, who was telling me? In Chowpatty. They read Lilamrita while people are having breakfast, you know. We used to do it here, remember Bhakti? We used to read that here, and we had a designated reader. And you'd be eating your prasadam and you're hearing the wonderful transcendental pastimes of Srila Prabhupada. Maybe we can present that to the executive and say, hey, listen, how about doing that again? You know, we set up a little microphone up there and we dedicate a roster. So it's not just talking about our kids and the dirty nappies and the football or the cricket. Hang on. Talking about the cricket. You know, it's something that we're talking about spiritual life, you know. I'm sorry, but I'm also part of that. How many runs did he score?
Wow.
You know, so Maya is still there, you know, even after 37 years. She still comes in and says, you want to know the cricket scores? I know you want to know the cricket scores. Okay, what's a cricket score? Anyway, we battle on. Let's go and fight a war against Maya. Everybody going to fight a war?
I will.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai!
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu.
Jai!